Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with co-host Skip Coriel about his latest book. Then we'll meet National Guard Brigadier General Gary Roper, and we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and self-defense report. Skip, you don't need much introducing. Your new book is entitled Self-Defense Scenarios. That's an incredibly appropriate thing right now. Anyway, start by giving us a quick review of your time in the Marines.
Well, Colonel, I went in the Marine Corps July 24, 1975, and I was in for 6 years, the Jimmy Carter years. And I tell you, being a peacetime Marine is rough, but I got a lot of good training. Didn't get to use it a whole lot, but, you know, I did have fun and I learned skills and a warrior mindset that has been with me for the rest of my life, Colonel.
You know, it's amazing how service in the military will do that regardless of the scenario.
Yeah.
Okay. Now discuss your efforts that you're doing now in teaching safe and proper use of weapons, including in self-defense. That skill of yours really affects your book, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. I've been teaching concealed carry classes for going on 22 years now, and I've taught well over 18,000 people how to carry concealed. And it's just something fun that I do. I enjoy it. It's a passion of mine. And it's worthwhile because I'm teaching families how to protect themselves and be safe around firearms. So it's a great thing. And I plan on keeping on doing it until I can't do it anymore, Colonel.
Well, and I hope you do. I've taken some of your classes and they are really first rate. Skip, let's talk about your book. It's entitled Self-Defense Scenarios. And the title sort of describes what it is, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, self-defense scenarios. And then the subtitle is Staying Alive in a Dangerous World. This is, you know, basically I got the idea for this book from what I do on Frontlines of Freedom. You know, we have the self-defense report every single week, but it's a very abbreviated version of the book. You know, in the radio here, we've got limited time. I've got like 2 minutes, you know, to tell you a scenario and then what you should do about it. In the book, I've got a lot more time. And, you know, these scenarios, they're common everyday scenarios that people get into, you know, things like a home invasion or a parking lot mugging, a child abduction, walking through the park and being accosted, ATM robberies, dog attacks, road rage, you name it. You know, I go over all of these, but it's a little different because I've found a way to combine my novel writing skills because, you know, over half my books are novels. So I have my storytelling capability and I've combined it with my expertise with self-defense. And the first half of the chapter is a story about a person, and it basically tells you, okay, here is the person, here's what they like, here's what they did, here's what happened to them. And then I go ahead and I give a breakdown of, you know, basically a tactical analysis. And I just say, okay, what did they do right? What'd they do wrong? And what should you do if you ever get in that scenario? So it's entertaining, but it's also very, very educational, Colonel.
Yes, I was going to say, and that's a good combination. It is entertaining, but it's incredibly educational because I don't care how much involved you are in self-defense and all that sort of thing. You're never really ready. Now, if you walk down an alley and you know there are bad guys in it, you're ready. But in living life, you're never really ready. And the more you can do to get your mind organized that way, the safer you're liable to be, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, Colonel, it's you know, you've been in military combat, and I haven't. I was peacetime Marine, but I imagine it's probably similar. I mean, were you ever truly 100% ready for that first battle? I mean, if if, you know, the general came to you and said, okay, we're going to put you in a battle. Are you ready now? You know, my response is, well, can I have some more training? you know, you could always use more training, more knowledge, a better skill set. But, you know, life doesn't give that to you. And, you know, basically what I've learned from my students is they're constantly wondering, you know, okay, I get in this situation, a guy jumps out from behind a dumpster, he's got a knife, but I'm not totally sure what to do about it because it's never really happened to me before. And that makes total sense. But hesitation in combat can get you killed. So this technique that I use, it's called visualization. You know, I tell you the story, you imagine it in your own mind, you let it play out in your mind, and then I follow up with the tactical analysis and give you a better, okay, Colonel, if this happens to you, what are you going to do about it? Here's what you should do. Here's what you shouldn't do. And I grade the people at the end of every chapter. And, you know, that's just kind of a fun thing that I do. But, you know, it's a good idea to help get yourself ready for actual civilian combat.
That's true. This is Colonel Danny Gilliman, Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with co-host Skip Coriel about his newest book, Self-Defense Scenarios. Skip, it's a little bit like playing football. If I'm playing a line against you and we have to think about what we're going to do, we won't be successful. You've got to be at work intuitively, instinctively. Now, it's harder to do in these kind of scenarios, but the more you can do to prepare yourself, the better chance you have. That's how I see it. That makes sense?
Yeah, it does. You know, I look at it this way. All of self-defense is scenario-based, and all scenarios are extremely fluid and dynamic. They change from moment to moment to moment. So you have to know going in, what am I going to do in this basic scenario? But then you also have to have the flexibility to be able to adapt and survive and change tactics if what you originally planned, you know, doesn't work. Because as you know, Colonel, battle plans don't always go exactly the way you had them figured out.
You know, I've noticed that. And mental flexibility. You can't let yourself get intimidated or pushed down. You've got to be aggressive mentally. Skip, that's a great thing. Talk to listeners who want to buy a copy of Self-Defense Scenarios. By the way, mention some of your other books, too.
Yeah, all of my books, and this is my 20th book, Colonel. All of my books are available on Amazon.com. Most of them are available in audiobook, in ebook, and in paperback and hardcover as well. So just go to Amazon.com and just do a search on my name, Skip Coriel, Coryell, and they'll pop right up there and you can go ahead and get them.
And I've read most of his books. They're entertaining, fun, and educational. Skip, thanks. Thanks for presenting your book. I'm really glad you're on our team. You're a great friend.
Well, thank you, Colonel. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we're going to talk with National Guard General Gary Roper about, of course, the National Guard. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to run hard for a couple of miles, troops. This while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM. And you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam, PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are concerned veterans for America. the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
If you are suffering from anxiety, joint muscle aches, or trouble sleeping, try Day 3 Creation, a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products created from natural, organic, laboratory-tested ingredients. Day 3 comes from a servant's heart as God calls us to care for each other with compassion and honesty. 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing disabled vets with service dogs. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. I joined Barry Law for the celebration of Memorial Day in Omaha, Nebraska. While there, I met General Gary Ropers. He's in the National Guard, and we've got a lot in common, and we've sort of agreed on some interesting things that I want to share. So glad to welcome you to the show, Gary.
Well, thanks, Danny. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming here to Omaha.
Hey, neat place. General, start by talking about your military career. How, when, why did you join?
So it started in 1981. So I've been, next month, I'll have 41 years in. Followed the footsteps of my older brother, who got in the year before I did. So it kind of gave me an insight as to what the Guard had to offer, plus a chance to do education for college and pay for it. So I walked away with not having any college debt.
That's sort of a cool move, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I try to talk to all these young kids that are trying to go to college now and tell them, hey, I'll pay for your college. Not I, but the Guard will pay for the college, and you'll walk away and be able to be debt-free.
It was true in your day, and it's still true today.
Correct. Yeah, especially with now, we pay 100% tuition for the state of Nebraska for all state universities. So,
wow, that sounds awfully good. You can check in your own state to find out if there's anything special there. So what did you do in the Guard? What kind of jobs did you have?
Well, I was enlisted for 10 years. I started out as the tank turret mechanic. So I spent my time at Fort Knox, learning how to fix the tanks. And then we converted to field artillery. So I became a forward observer. And then in 1990, I decided to go to OCS. And then I became a field artillery officer and stuck with field artillery until I became a GO. And they took away my FA branch and made me a GO. So that's where I'm at today.
Okay. So you're a cannon cocker from way, way back.
Way back. Yeah. 1987, I think, is when we started field artillery. So.
Okay. Well, the Army National Guard is very definitely Army, and it's very definitely part of the defense of our nation. The National Guard is unique. It's got a unique role in the defense. Talk to us about what's different about the Army Guard. Well, I guess the Air Force Guard applies to.
Yeah. So we, in Nebraska, we have both Army and Air National Guard. Unique difference between regular Army and then the active Air Force is we also help and support the governor of the state of Nebraska and the good citizens of our state. A lot of the times, state emergencies, we have been very involved in the floods that we had in 2019. And then we went into the civil disturbance and the COVID. And here of lately, we've helped out with putting out the fires have been out in the western part of the state that's tearing up a lot of land. So our helicopters have the ability to drop large buckets of water on those. So we help our state out that way, besides answering the call for the nation.
And those are jobs that the active Army and probably even the Army Reserve and Air Force Reserve don't do. Am I right?
You're correct. Because we do, as a National Guard member, we support the governors of our state. For us, Governor Pete Ricketts. And so the active component will not come in to support unless it's really a dire need. And then they do a whole bunch of other stuff to get the Title 10, which are the active side of the house into helping the state out.
Yeah. As a company commander in the 101st Airborne Division in 1967, I had my first trip to Michigan when I went to the Detroit riots. So I know that the active units can be involved, but they're really the last choice, right?
Yeah. They are the last choice to bring those guys in. The President of the United States had to federalize the active component to have them come into a state to help out with riots. We had the civil disturbance here in Omaha and Lincoln, and it was just within our Army Guard and Air Guard help and support both of the cities.
So if you were sent into a city to assist, and let's say a rioty type situation, what authority do your people have compared to police?
So we come in to support the civil society. So we're not really society, but the civil side of the house. We supported and answered to the Lincoln Police Chief in Omaha and the Lincoln Police Chief in Lincoln. And so we took all our directions from them if they needed us to go help support items. And we also helped out this Nebraska State Patrol because they had the governor's mansion and the Capitol building where Colonel Brewer, who was one of our state senators, where he works at when he's not running around the countryside helping other countries out.
Okay. So National Guardsmen are not law enforcement officers. Am I right?
We have the
ability. In that situation, could they be?
They could be, yeah. We have the ability to posse comitatus for our state to say that we have the ability to arrest people. But a lot of the times we're there to help support either the local police or the local districts that we're helping out.
So the posse comitatus is also a last choice.
Correct.
You can be in, you can, I'm fond of talking about in military, the man behind the man behind the gun. There's a lot of people behind the guy with a gun. There's a lot of need support needed behind the cop on the beat or out doing something. And the guard can do that kind of thing, which frees all the police up to be out doing their thing. And they can go further if necessary.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did in both Lincoln and Omaha, is help protect businesses while the police were out helping make sure that the people that were out there protesting were doing it peacefully and not wrecking the a local business. So yes, exactly what we're doing.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking with General Gary Ropers about the National Guard. So the role of the guard when it's not doing that, what's it like being a guardsman when there's not a crisis going on?
We have our deployments that we go help support the nation. Currently have a unit over in the Middle East. We have several down along the Southwest border. So we're still building up the forces to help protect and defend the United States. So we still do that no matter what we're doing, even if we're doing a state active duty mission.
And most of the time, I suspect, you aren't doing anything special. You're doing your weekly drills and you're doing your daily whatever, job, school, life, whatever. That's true most of the time. Am I right?
Correct. Yeah.
And in that situation, you basically have one drill a month and 2 weeks each summer?
Yeah. Unless you look at the vehicles that were in Iraq or Afghanistan, right? Where it said when they after they said those two things, right? But yeah, so for most of us, I'm a traditional soldier. I'm not a full-time guard guy. I have a regular job that I work Monday through Friday, and then I do this on the weekends. And I'm saying in probably about 90% of our force that's in the both Army and Air National Guard are the same boat as I am.
As I recollect, if you go to your weekend drill, you end up getting paid roughly about 1 week's pay of active duty?
You get paid for 4 days of active duty pay. So, not quite a full week. Yeah.
Okay. And that's what you get once a month for your one drill weekend. Obviously, if you have the 2 weeks, that you get paid for that.
Correct.
But just as a routine matter of fact, in the absence of something else, you're going to have 4 days pay every month that you can count on coming in, assuming that you're there and you do your job.
Correct.
Wow. Well, wrap it up. In your opinion, Gary, is it a good deal being a member of the National Guard?
I think it's a great deal. I try to talk to those young kids every day to try to get them to join the Guard because of the not only the benefit of working at and becoming a team member within your company or your troop, but all the other benefits that are out there that the National Guard offers. And there's a laundry list of them that are there that they can definitely go out to our Nebraska Guard website and try to figure out all the different benefits that are out there for them.
And I suspect that's true in every state.
Oh, yeah. Every state's got their recruiting retention battalions that are out there trying to get young men and women to join.
Gary, thank you. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your continuing service to our nation. I'm proud to call you friend.
All right. Thanks, Danny. I appreciate it.
Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HealthVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HealthVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HealthVet.net. Visit HealthVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. Now it's time for our battle of the month. So, of course, we're going to be joined by Brigadier General Chris Petty. Hey, I'm glad you're on our team, Chris. Welcome aboard.
Thanks, Denny. A pleasure to be with you once again.
Chris, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army.
Okay. West Point graduate, 1987. Active duty time, but the Cold War was ending and everybody knew it. So we had the peace dividend. And so I joined the reserves for a while. And then I joined the National Guard because we had an aviation battalion here in Colorado. And I went through the normal progression of an officer, you know, company commander, battalion S3. And lo and behold, when I became a battalion commander, we got called to go to Iraq during the surge, which was kind of a turning point of my career because we really had quite a ride in Iraq supporting the Joint Special Operations Command doing air assaults throughout the year. So that kind of boosted some other opportunities for me. And then I commanded a brigade. And then lo and behold, they decided to make me a general and send me to Bosnia to take over the NATO headquarters in Bosnia. So I got to see a little peace enforcement operations for the joint force, not just the Army. And then I did some time on the Army staff in the Pentagon, so I got to see how the Army thinks and makes decisions and spends money. It was fascinating. And really, I finished out my time at U.S. NORTHCOM as the Deputy Director of Operations. So an interesting, strange Army career, and it was just fascinating and enjoyable and challenging and all that good stuff. So that's my career in a nutshell.
Okay. And somehow you got a love for military history through all this. So that's why you're the guy for the Battle of the Month. And this month, the Battle of the Month is Gettysburg, if I remember correctly.
That's right. Gettysburg.
And as I recollect, it was the most bloody battle of the Civil War and probably killed more Americans than any other battle in history. Am I right?
You're right. You know, here we are. We're coming off of, July 4th weekends for everybody, you know, and Gettysburg was fought in July of 1863. And you're right, it was the bloodiest battle, the largest amount of casualties ever in a North American conflict with 50,000 soldiers killed and wounded from both sides. And it was the largest battle. Over 160,000 soldiers, both Union and Confederate, fought on those 3 days and near that small Pennsylvania town. But what makes Gettysburg so famous, so studied was, you know, it was the turning point, one of the critical turning points of the American Civil War. In fact, it's been referred to as the high watermark of the Confederacy. So lots of reasons. It's a very notable battle.
And it really was a huge turning point because the Confederacy and General Lee were doing really well against the Union prior to that, weren't they?
They were. In fact, it was a source of great frustration for President Lincoln. And, you know, your listeners are familiar with Lincoln trying to find the right generals. And it's interesting because, you know, at the time of Gettysburg, Grant was starting his process. Well, he was well on his way, but he had started his process on his Vicksburg campaign, which really launched him as the key general in, you know, President Lincoln's arsenal of leaders. So you have Gettysburg happening in the Eastern Theater, while you have Vicksburg happening in the Western Theater, and both of them together, both those victories, and I know Gettysburg was tactically a draw, but it was a strategic victory for the North because they turned back Robert E. Lee, they beat Lee, and the Confederate Army limped home. But those two things combined really signaled the beginning of the end of the Confederacy.
It was, and that's something that most people that I've talked to don't realize how significant Gettysburg was. Again, all by itself, it was really important. But when you match what was else was going on at the time, that was hugely significant. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty. Keep going, Chris.
Yeah, you brought up the significance. And you know, unless you sort of understand the history and the timeline of the Civil War, which is a little bit difficult, actually, unless you study the stuff, you've got to realize that in the Eastern Theater, where, you know, Lincoln was replacing his generals, the Hooker, you know, had just come off a disastrous defeat at Chancellorsville. People are familiar with the Battle of Chancellorsville, and hopefully we'll cover that sometime. But, you know, General Lee brilliantly maneuvered at Chancellorsville and trounced Hooker. So Hooker's sitting there near Fredericksburg going, you know, okay, I still want to sort of threaten Richmond, because that's kind of what the Union armies had been doing. But man, Lee just kicked my butt at Chancellorsville. So Hooker was slow and cautious and asking Lincoln for reinforcements because he just was convinced he was outnumbered. So Lincoln got frustrated and relieved Hooker of command and replaced him with General George Meade. And so General George Meade is, you know, this more unassuming Union general. And he's like, okay, wow, Lee is now invading. He's moving his armies and I'm the guy. I just found out a couple of days ago and I've got to go move north and react. So, I mean, it's such an interesting story.
It is. And there was so much going on and nobody really knew. Everybody was doing their best, as near as I can tell. But we sort of had a really not too well controlled military back then. I don't know that anybody did, but there were different people doing different things. Communications were not what we're used to today. When you try to put yourself back in that environment, I couldn't text you and ask you what you were doing.
Right. I mean, you were delivering messages on horseback. And if you were lucky, you might have a telegraph line strung along a railroad somewhere that really, you know, improved your communications. And that was it. But one of the things I love about Gettysburg, and I know your listeners will know these stories because they've seen the movie Gettysburg, they've probably read a book like Killer's Angels, but the fascinating subplots in Gettysburg, and here's just a few of them. So you have Jeb Stuart, you know, everyone's familiar with Jeb Stuart, the great Confederate cavalry commander. Well, he's on a deep raid mission east of where all the action is, thinking he's doing all these great things to disrupt and destroy Union railroads and supplies. And what happens is he doesn't even get back to Lee until 2 July. So Lee's already fully committed to the battle. He was deprived of all of his intelligence from Jeb Stuart. So that's a subplot that's fascinating. You've got day one of Gettysburg and Buford's cavalry with these relatively new repeating rifles holding off basically two Confederate corps, which is what allowed General Reynolds, Union General Reynolds, to essentially claim that high ground that was just south of Gettysburg that proved so decisive to the outcome of the battle. Most of your listeners have heard of Colonel Joshua Chamberlain's 20th Maine at Little Round Top on day two. I mean, what a great story that is in the 3 days of this battle of just bravery and tenacity and, you know, the bayonet charge that finally drove Hood's division back. And then, you know, then of course you've got the story of Pickett's charge. Everybody knows Pickett's charge. Longstreet's commander, you know, in Longstreet's corps on day three. And, you know, you look at it and you go, how could Lee have made that disastrous decision to do a frontal assault in the middle of the Union lines that resulted in, you know, the carnage of Pickett's charge? But if you put it all together, you know, it wasn't a terrible decision at the time, but you could say Lee was probably a little overconfident too, coming off of Chancellorsville and things like that. So just so many great subplots in this three-day battle of Gettysburg that's just fascinating to understand.
It is. And we could go on, but we're about out of time. First, I want you to talk for a quick minute about your military history program, Battle Digest, so that listeners can plug into it if they wish.
Yeah, Denny, I created Battle Digest to make military history, which really is history, I mean, frankly.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make it easy. I wanted to create this Reader's Digest, kind of Cliff Notes, executive summary format, because not everyone has the time to read all the 300-page books and get every single detail of which horse every commander rode into battle. So what I did is I said, let's get the key highlights, the big contours. What happened? Why did it happen? And what can we learn? And so that's what Battle Digest is. It's kind of a newsletter, and you can order individual battles or you can subscribe. But I really hope some of your listeners go to battledigest.com. Just simple one word, battledigest.com. And check that out, because it just makes it so easy to learn this important stuff.
Yes, sir. And you just written a book. Give us a quick summary of that.
Okay. My book is called 12 Battles Every American Should Know, and it's the number 12. So if you go to Amazon and type in 12 Battles Every American Should Know, or even 12 Battles, it'll pop up. And that is a compendium of what I think are the 12 battles that should be common knowledge for basic American civics and history instruction. You know, we're all Americans. We have a common culture and a common history. And these are 12 battles that we should all understand. Obviously, Gettysburg's in here, but there are also battles like D-Day and Midway, you know, turning point battles in our history. And again, they're just really, the format is so unique that I hope your readers check it out, because it's just an easy way to learn. So 12 Battles Every American Should Know, available on Amazon.
Chris, thank you. Thank you for this great presentation of our history. I look forward to next month's Battle of the Month.
Me too, Danny. I look forward to it.
Thanks, bro. Troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at PTSDlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want you Ranger ready, then stand at ease. Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
The VA frequently denies veterans disability benefits for PTSD. Barry Law has been helping fellow veterans with PTSD fight for compensation for over 20 years. At Barry Law, we've spent decades building a team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees to provide veterans with maximum firepower when appealing VA decisions. To appeal your decision, visit PTSDlawyers.com.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Army vet Peter has a wife who is a police officer. He really appreciated the interview with a general who was also a cop. He was right on.
Thanks, Peter. Police officers are our first cousins in valor. They, too, put their lives on the line every day to protect us. I'm proud of them.
George, an Afghan vet, appreciated the two interviews with guys who had to overcome hard situations. One of them was in combat. Those were first class.
George, Patrick Girondi, and Chris Whitmore both had very, very hard, tough situations, and they came through them. Thanks for your comments. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
On 25 July 1864, during the Civil War, three boats, commanded by Rear Admiral Farragut's Flag Lieutenant J.C. Watson, reconnoitered the Mobile Bay area in an attempt to discover the type and number of water mines laid by Confederates off Fort Morgan. Watson and his men located and cut loose many of the torpedoes, as mines were called then. They were aided by the fact that a number were inoperative. This hazardous work was indispensable to the success of the Navy's coming operations against Mobile. Several similar night operations were conducted.
I don't think I'd want to do one of those operations. And on 25 July 1866, the rank of admiral was created. David Farragut was appointed the first admiral in our Navy, and Ulysses Grant was named general of the Army, the first officer to hold that rank.
On 27 July 1909, Orville Wright tested the U.S. Army's first airplane, flying himself and a passenger for 1 hour, 12 minutes and 40 seconds over Fort Myer, Virginia.
And on 26 July 1945, during World War II, the Potsdam Declaration was issued in a radio broadcast demanding the immediate and unconditional surrender of Japan. It also threatened the prompt and utter destruction of the Japanese homeland if the government of Japan failed to do so. On the 28th, the Japanese premier announced to the Japanese press that the Potsdam Declaration was to be ignored. This led to the dropping of the atomic bomb on Nagasaki on August 9th.
That same day, the 26th of July, the heavy cruiser USS Indianapolis delivered the consignment of uranium-235 needed to assemble the first operational atomic bomb to the American base in Tainan. Days after delivering the bomb material, the Indianapolis was sunk by a Japanese submarine.
And on 27 July 1945, the U.S. Communist Party was formed.
On July 25, 1946, we detonated a second atomic bomb at Bikini Atoll in the Pacific in the first underwater test of the device.
And on 26 July 1948, President Harry Truman, in an executive order, called for, quote, equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons in the armed forces without regard to race, color, religion, or national origin. The U.S. military was thus desegregated, leading the way for the rest of our nation.
And on July 27, 1953, after 3 years of a bloody and frustrating war, the United States, the People's Republic of China, North Korea, and South Korea agreed to an armistice, bringing the Korean War to an end. The armistice ended America's first experiment with the Cold War concept of limited war. The Korean War began on June 25, 1950, when communist North Korea invaded South Korea. Almost immediately, the U.S. secured a resolution from the UN calling for the military defense of South Korea against the North Korean aggression. In a matter of days, U.S. land, air, and sea forces had joined the battle. The United States intervention turned the tide of the war, and soon the U.S. and South Korean forces were pushing into North Korea and toward that nation's border with China. In November and December 1951, hundreds of thousands of troops from the People's Republic of China began heavy assaults against the American and South Korean forces. The war eventually bogged down into a battle of attrition.
On 29 July 1965, the first 4,000 paratroopers of the 101st Airborne Division arrived in Vietnam. They made a demonstration jump immediately after arriving, observed by General William Westmoreland and the outgoing ambassador, formerly General Maxwell Taylor. Taylor and Westmoreland were both former commanders of the 101st, known as the Screaming Eagles. The 101st had a long and storied history, including combat jumps during the invasion of Normandy on June 6, 1944, and the subsequent Market Garden airborne operation in the Netherlands. Later, the division distinguished itself by the defense of the Bastogne during the Battle of the Bulge. The 1st Brigade fought as a separate brigade until 1967, when the remainder of the division arrived in Vietnam. The combat elements of the division consisted of 10 battalions of air mobile infantry, 6 battalions of artillery, an aerial rocket artillery unit, and an air reconnaissance unit. Another unique feature of the division was its aviation group, which consisted of 3 aviation battalions of assault helicopters and gunships. The majority of the 101st Airborne's tactical operation were within the Central Highlands and the Ashau Valley further north. Among its major operations was the brutal fight for Ap Bia Mountain, known as Hamburger Hill. The last division to leave Vietnam, the remaining elements of the 101st Airborne returned to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, where today it's the Army's only air mobile division. During the war, troopers of the 101st received 17 medals of honor for bravery in combat. The division suffered almost 20,000 soldiers killed or wounded in action in Vietnam, over twice as many as the 9,328 casualties that it suffered during World War II. And that's military history for today. And it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Police said a woman who was lawfully carrying a pistol shot and killed a man who began shooting into a crowd of people Wednesday night in Charleston. Dennis Butler was killed after shooting at dozens of people attending a graduation party Wednesday near the Vista View apartment complex. No injuries were reported from those at the party. Investigation said Butler was warned about speeding in the area with children present before he left. He later returned with an AR-15-style firearm and began firing at the crowd before he was shot and killed. Instead of running from the threat, she engaged the threat and saved several lives last night. Charleston Police Department Chief of Detectives Tony Haslett said officers did not go into detail, but said Butler did have an extensive criminal history.
Thanks, Colonel. In 1996, 97 and 1998, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, conducted large-scale national surveys asking about defensive gun usage. They never released the findings or even acknowledged they had studied the topic. No one really knows for sure why they didn't release the findings. Could it be possible that the research results didn't fit their agenda? Gary Kleck, a researcher and analyst, obtained a copy of the raw data and ran analyses that concluded the following. Guns were used 2.46 million times per year to defend against crime. And guns were used defensively by victims about 3.6 times as often as they were used offensively by criminals. It's no wonder the Clinton administration didn't publish the results of their study, because it blew their gun control agenda right out of the water. The unvarnished, unpolitical truth is this. Guns are used over 2 million times every year by everyday, law-abiding citizens like you and I to thwart violent crime against themselves or the ones they love. It's a fact. And as we know, facts are very stubborn things. But a thinking person has to ask himself, if this is true, and the government knows it's true, then why are they trying to pass more gun control legislation? In my mind, the answer is simple. They're not trying to empower me or to save me or to make me safer. They're trying to control me. And not just me, but you as well. The Second Amendment was written by the founders for one reason and one reason only. It wasn't to protect our hunting rights or to protect the right to target practice or shoot sporting clays. It wasn't even to guarantee our right to self-protection against criminals. The overriding purpose of the Second Amendment was to protect all of us, you and I and our children and grandchildren, against an out-of-control federal government. That's right. It's there as a deterrent against tyrants. And all of us need to protect the Second Amendment so it can continue protecting us and our children and our grandchildren. God bless this woman for her bravery and determination as she thwarted a mass shooting. Many lives could have been lost if not for her gun and her chutzpah. Front Lines of Freedom gives her a hearty salute and a job well done.
Well said, Skip. Your assessment of the Constitution is exactly what I've found from my studies, too. Good job. Our movie of the month is Our Kind of Love. It was the movie for May, but our hacked website kept many of you from accessing it. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We will review it at the end of the month. And I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at Danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, General Jerry Boykin will join us to discuss the way our troops are losing their rights in the COVID situation and the area of freedom of religion. Then Steve Wilson from HelpVet.net will discuss helping vets. And we'll hear from retired Army Colonel and current state Senator Tom Brewer. And we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud, Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.